up to yonder, beyond the lights, neon, fluorescent. My essence is something to ponder. Your talent ain't something to squander. Blessed and favored so highly, anointed and portrait I might be. This is that all that podcast featuring Kyrie.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the All That Podcast, and today I have Mr. Taylor Johnson with me, program specialist for United Against Human Trafficking. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
No problem. You're doing great work and necessary work. Human trafficking, sex trafficking, has been a big issue in Houston specifically, where we are. And I was just hearing stories, and, you know, you watch the news, and it's always like, oh, this girl is missing now, or this is happening here, this is happening there. So I was like, this is a topic that really needs to be addressed, and we should, you know, talk about this because it is scary. As somebody who obviously has women in their family, you know, a girlfriend, sister, cousins, you know, and so it's a very, 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 very scary issue. So I'm glad that you we're willing to come on and speak with me.
Yeah, this is my favorite thing to talk about. So
yeah,
you'll have to like stop me sometime.
Right? No, it's fine. I guess let's get into a little backstory. What made you want to get into this line of work?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when I was young, I think a lot of people that are in like helping professions kind of have a similar way that their story starts. You know, mm-hmm. You're young and you go through trauma and you kind of realize one day, wow, like, if I can help other people not go through what I went through, that
right.
would be really fulfilling and make mm-hmm. me really happy. And so I wanted to go into, like, substance abuse counseling, family counseling, stuff like that. So I was like, what's the best way to do that? And you search and you find social work.
Mm-hmm.
And then my internship, I was placed at a school, and I was like, why? I don't want to work with like young people. That's mm-hmm. no thanks.
Yeah.
But I actually found it like really rewarding because there were a lot of kiddos who were in similar situations, kind of like when I was young. And
right.
I was able to kind of help them through that and mm-hmm. give them things that they needed. And so I was like, okay, maybe there's something there. And at the same time, a volunteer from UAHT, the organization that I'm with now, mm-hmm. came and spoke at one of our classes. And you don't hear about something like human trafficking and it, like, leave your brain.
Right.
That's something that sticks with you.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I got my license, was searching for jobs, and I saw that UAHT had a position open where I could work with youth. And I was like, wow, that's pretty serendipitous, like, mm-hmm. working with youth and this issue that I'm, like, newly kind of passionate about. And it worked out. And that was about 2.5 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and I've been having a really great time, really a lot of growth. And a lot of learning, but it's been really, really awesome.
Right. Can you explain to us what exactly you guys do at United Against Human Trafficking?
Yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. So we try to tackle the issue of human trafficking from as holistic of a approach as possible. So we look at it from like all angles. So I work in the education team.
Mm-hmm.
So I work with youth. So mostly schools, juvenile detention facilities, residential treatment centers, anywhere where there's young people, but especially like vulnerable young people.
Right.
We also have outreach, so we'll go to places like homeless shelters, day labor sites. We want to reach the most vulnerable people, not just youth, but like those adult populations mm-hmm. that are vulnerable. We have case management, so that is pretty new. We've been doing case management for a little over a year now. And I think up until August, like I don't even think when I learned this number that August had been accounted for yet. In 2021, we've served over 60
mm-hmm.
individuals who are in the life, who are trying to get out. So that's really awesome. Our case manager is incredible. What else do we do? Education, yeah. So our education goes a little further. We talk to parents, teachers, law enforcement, healthcare professionals. Those like professionals that are kind of on the front lines, that's like one of the most important populations to train, is because they're the most likely to interact with someone who's in the life,
mm-hmm.
a victim or a survivor. So they really need to know how to like identify the situations and respond to them. We do a lot of sort of more of the direct service piece. We'll do a lot of like support groups. So we have a program called Real Talk, which is designed for youth who've undergone trauma. It's kind of like to give them coping skills and to help them understand like what healthy and unhealthy relationships are.
Mm-hmm.
We also recently launched Stopping Sexual Exploitation, which is a program for men, mostly men who have a history with sex purchasing. So we'll bring them in and we'll say like, hey, like more than 70% of people who buy sex say they want to stop. So why does it keep happening? Let's like dig in really deep on that. That's like the best part of my work. I'm so in love with that program. We just got done with our first official sex buyers cohort a couple weeks ago. So really, really happy on that. Yeah, I don't know that I missed very much.
So you guys are hitting this thing from all angles in a way. So you're not only, helping, the young girls or whomever might have gotten involved or I don't want to say involved, got dragged into, the human trafficking, sex trafficking world. And also you're rehabilitating men who were complicit in it also. Mm-hmm. I love that. So I want you to, and I heard you say you love it too. So, because I feel like a lot of people, and I would say maybe rightfully so, would demonize men, in that situation. So from your perspective, what have you seen from these men, and what has it taught you about forgiveness?
So I think I want to, before I, and hold on to that question. I don't want to forget. I just tend to be like, what was the question again?
No.
It's important to think about like why we go into that work.
Mm-hmm.
So in your average, I guess, human trafficking case, there's no really such thing as an average because every situation is completely different and unique. But you have kind of like a triangle of who it is that's quote unquote involved. So you have like the victim, the person who's exploited. You have a trafficker or a pimp is kind of what that is commonly known as. But then you also have the demand side of it.
Yeah.
So without, literally what happens is a trafficker treats trafficked persons, exploited persons as like their product.
Right.
And without a need, without a demand for that product, there's no supply. There's no traffickers. There's no. So what we do is we look at the victims who are, the people who are being exploited.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of issues with identification because, like, let's say someone who's around, like a healthcare professional or a law enforcement officer is around, but they don't notice the signs.
Right.
Or they think, oh, well, this is a prostitution case,
mm-hmm.
and so I'm not going to worry about it. I might even pass judgment off that person instead of recognize them as a victim who needs help, because something like 80%+ of people who are in what we would call prostitution are actually being trafficked.
Right.
Right. So, like, they might completely miss a situation. There's a lot of fraud and coercion that's taking place, so a victim might identify with her trafficker.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a pimp. That's not. That's my boyfriend. That's my partner.
Got it.
So it's really hard, and again, pimps and traffickers will make their victims feel afraid.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you say something, here are the consequences
right.
for you or your loved ones. A lot of times they rely on their trafficker to have their basic needs met, like housing, food, clothes.
So they're very dependent.
Yeah, mm-hmm. so they're not always in a position where they can cut that off.
Right.
So then you look at the pimps and the traffickers. You look at that side. And it's like, okay, well, we have to prove that force, fraud, or coercion were taking place. Because, like, prostitution is a separate crime. Like, if you can show that someone was willing and consenting to that activity, that's different than if they were forced or tricked into it.
Right.
So you have to prove that, but we were just kind of saying, like, it's really hard to get victim testimony mm-hmm. for the reasons that I just mentioned.
Right.
And pimps and traffickers are generally kind of dangerous. So those two angles are, like, really hard sometimes. So then what you do is you look at the demand side of it. Like, how can we stop before it even,
right.
before even someone wants to buy sex?
Yeah.
Or purchase products that were born out of forced or cheap labor.
Gotcha.
So that's kind of like the angle of like why we mm-hmm. even do that in the first place. Because I feel like that's a question that I get sometimes is like, why would you even waste time trying to? But yeah, the rehabilitation thing, this came up in a conversation that I was having the other day
mm-hmm.
where we do tend to jump to like, oh, well, that's just like a behavior. That's a you problem.
Right.
That's actually something we talk about in the class itself, is there's like this really big difference between shame and guilt. Shame says I am bad, which means that it's tied to my identity, which means that I can't change. And guilt is, oh, I did something that caused harm. And that's something that we can alter. That's something that we can do to like adjust our behavior and kind of make things right. And I guess like there was this really interesting moment that happened last year. We were doing some volunteer cohorts. I was trying to learn how to facilitate. And there was this moment where we had a participant who had a history. He was a volunteer with us, but he had also had a history in being involved in the life, not as someone who was being exploited.
Okay.
And there were a lot of moments where we were talking about some of the stuff in class, and I related to him, like on a really deep level, because it's not just an education thing. Like, it's mostly education, but it's also like we talk about what it means to be a man, right? And like how men are often encouraged to like hide their emotions or to prove that they're a real man by dominating others or like using their physical strength or
having a lot of women.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Things like that. And if you don't have that, then you're either outcasted or you're then subjected to other men's violence.
Right.
So in that process of learning, like, why do we feel these ways? Why do we behave in this way because of our emotions that we're not dealing with? You identify with someone on that really deep level who is that person that you might have demonized before. And there was just like this realization, like, wow, like we're really not that different. I feel like I maybe am someone who's had a lot of luck, a lot of privilege, a lot of good fortune to have been provided strategies to like cope with different things that I've experienced. Not everyone has that. And so what we want to do is give that to as many people as possible. And sex buying is a behavior that's really not terribly different from like gambling, using drugs or alcohol.
It's an addiction.
It's a coping mechanism.
Yeah.
So, you know, once you recognize it for what it is, it's easier to approach it with the lens of like compassion and trying to understand and help them understand like the harm that's being caused. And it's definitely like we try to let them know like we're not coming from a place of judgment.
Right.
The class really focuses on like this issue of gender-based violence, which is kind of what we see, like human trafficking. It's very much an issue of gender-based violence. But if you look at it from that perspective, it's usually a man who is perpetrating violence. And it might not be always a woman who's on that on the other end of that, but it's usually a man who's perpetrating. So even when it's a trans person, someone from the LGBTQ community, or just another man, it's usually a man who's perpetrating. So it's a spectrum of gender-based violence. And every man, program is mostly for men, is on that spectrum somewhere.
Right.
So it's like, how do we walk together to ensure that we can live in a world without exploitation?
I love that. And we'll get back to the main topic, but quickly. I love that you guys are doing that because, you know, I feel like oftentimes we don't go deep enough into the problem. We just try to fix things with the topical solution, you know what I mean? Like, but we don't go deeper into it. Like, okay, you can demonize these guys or whatever, but then all that's going to be doing is creating, you know, it's going to go to their children. Mm-hmm. If you don't stop and really get to the root of why and start to, you know, really do the work like you guys are doing to get down to, okay, why do you think like this? Why do you think you have to do this? And that's really the work that needs to be done. Because as a man, you probably can attest to this, it's like from an early age, this is indoctrinated in us, you know, about always having to have a lot of women, you know, you being kind of made fun of if you didn't have sex by a certain point, or, you know, then if you had a girlfriend, you know, the number one question from people around you or males around you is, did you hit yet, or something like that. So we feel like we, you know, associate manhood with the getting sex from a woman. And when you grow up like that, that's the prism you see a woman in.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Yeah. It's strictly sex. But, okay, getting back.
I love that.
Yeah.
I guess another piece of that, too, and like I said, you're going to have to stop me sometimes.
No, it's fine.
It's like, it's kind of like, when someone, okay, a lot of times what happens is someone will get like arrested for sex buying, mm-hmm. and they'll attend like a John's class. I don't know if you've ever heard of one of those, but a John is like a name for a person who is a sex buyer.
Okay.
So these like John's classes, they're like one day and they're like several hours and like that's it. But like our program, we take like 8 to 10 weeks and like sit down and we're like, look, mm-hmm. this is what the issue is, and here's how we're either complicit in it or perpetrating it and how we can change. And I think that's like the important part is like you mentioned, like, mm-hmm. okay, well, if you don't get to the root, then you're raising your kids a certain way. Their right. kids are going to, and like, that's just how you impact lasting change, is like really sitting and walking with people instead of blaming them. And
right.
Which, you know, yeah.
Why do you think that Houston is such a hot spot for sex trafficking? Is it because of the large number of population here, or why do you think Houston is such a hot spot?
There's lots of reasons. Mm-hmm. One thing that I really love doing is there's a lot of myths about human trafficking. There's a lot of like misconceptions.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those that I come across a lot is like people using human trafficking and like illegal immigration. Like they use those words
interchangeably.
Yeah, mm-hmm. but like they're very different.
Right.
They have there's some overlaps, right? So like mm-hmm. illegal immigration, for example, is a crime against a border. Someone's paying or exchanging a good or service to go from one place to another. But with trafficking, the commodity, what's being sold is body of the person,
right?
So there's like a really big difference. There are times where someone will be moved from one place to the next and then told, oh, okay, well, there's like travel expenses, or mm-hmm. I'm gonna put you up in an apartment for the first few months that you're here, but you gotta like pay me back,
right?
So they'll work in a restaurant or work in some kind of like agriculture environment,
mm-hmm.
and that quote-unquote debt never goes away,
right?
And that's how that's where that overlap may come in. So that's mm-hmm. kind of one example. We know we're right next to the U.S.-Mexico border.
Yeah.
We have I-10, which goes like literally from Florida to California.
Mm-hmm.
So like from NOLA to San Antonio, that's one of the largest hotspots for trafficking in the country.
I was talking to a friend of mine yesterday who lives in San Antonio, mm-hmm. and she was saying how San Antonio, is like you just said, is also a hotspot also.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Houston is also, I think, the most ethnically diverse city in the country still.
It is.
I don't know if it's still number one.
Mm-hmm.
So that plays kind of a part. Again, one of the myths is that most, if not all, human trafficking victims are from developing countries. They're like shipped over here mm-hmm. to have their organs taken from them or whatever. but a lot of what we see is actually domestic situations, domestic sex trafficking. So we have an incredibly diverse labor sector. You know, there are also a lot of big events in Houston. So things like the Super Bowl was here a few years ago. The Olympics are going to be here, 2026, I think.
Mm-hmm.
There is I'm sorry, I touched the microphone. There's a conference that's yearly. It's like a big oil and gas technology conference. People come in from all
over. And now Travis Scott is doing Astroworld every year festival.
See,
so that's huge. Yeah.
So there's like these big events where people are away from their families and they might want to, quote unquote, entertain themselves
mm-hmm.
and purchase sex. And that leads to an increase in demand. And
right.
traffickers are aware of that. So that's another thing about Houston specifically, is we have a lot of those really big people mm-hmm. who are coming in from all over events. So there are a lot of contributing factors. We're really spread out too. So like when I think of like Galveston, for example, that's Houston.
Yeah.
As far as I can, you know, when I'm just kind of like speaking about it, I consider that to kind of be like the Houston area anyway.
Yeah.
So you have from like Galveston all the way to like Katy, you could get away with calling that Houston.
Mm-hmm.
You have like Lake Jackson all the way up to Conroe could be considered Houston in a way. So because we're so spread out and we have so many different like law enforcement partners and stuff, like not everyone mm-hmm. is able to be trained. And if you go to those areas where there's a lot of families with low income and there's not a lot of access to education, healthcare, then traffickers are able to kind of thrive in those environments because they're preying on those vulnerabilities that people are experiencing.
Right. What are the demographics of the majority of girls you see being trafficked? And I'm asking this for a reason.
Okay.
Yeah.
So as far as like what tangible data we have, because a lot of the numbers and things are really difficult to get perfect because it's really hidden. It's really hard to detect. Even when you can detect it, you can't always go after it for reasons that I explained earlier.
Mm-hmm.
overwhelmingly what we see, perpetrators are men and victims are women and girls. As far as sex trafficking goes, mm-hmm. labor trafficking, it looks a little bit different. So like overall, human trafficking includes both sex and labor trafficking.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at worldwide, the ILO, the International Labor Organization, they put out a study a few years ago, and they determined that about 45% of the world's trafficking victims are women and girls. No, sorry, 55. Mm-hmm. And 45% are women, are men and boys.
Hmm.
I'm going to start that sentence over. 55% are women and girls, and 45% are men and boys.
Worldwide?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is not what you hear about.
Not at all.
News. And
but, okay, what would you say... in Houston specifically, race, what would you say is the common race?
Yeah.
In this?
As far as like actual, the numbers,
mm-hmm.
I don't know that I could tell you that, but
okay.
I know what we see historically is Black women and girls and Native American women and girls are the most impacted by mm-hmm. trafficking. And I think in Houston, Hispanic, Latino women and girls are for sex trafficking.
So... what role, I don't necessarily want to use the word racism.
Call it what
I mean,
it is.
I guess you could.
You know?
Okay.
Yeah.
So what role do you think racism plays in this? Because I'm of the belief that, okay, if you look at, I'm of the belief that the people in power really won't move on something until it's affecting their kids.
Yep.
So you look at the war on drugs, right?
Yeah.
And you see... you know, they're just not treating this as a mental health issue. It's just like jail, harsh sentences, people serving sometimes life for a little bit of weed. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But now, you know, you have the opioid crisis and it's affecting mm-hmm. majority white children. So, and now it's being treated as it should have been treated as a mental health issue. So, what role do you think racism is playing in there not being as much work as there should be mm-hmm. or attention that there should be on human trafficking?
Yeah. Well, part of that, one thing I want to say is it's getting a lot better.
Okay.
Houston, a lot of times, is referred to as like a hub for human trafficking.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we like to dissuade people from using that particular word, hub. We like to call ourselves a solution city. Because
okay.
we have like a million organizations that are working together to fight against it. And, you know, mm-hmm. we have the mayor's office, which is always doing mm-hmm. a ton of incredible work. So it's getting a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
And then I feel like we take two steps forward or 10 steps forward, 5 steps back.
Yeah.
And then you have something like last year, the Save the Children hashtag was floating around everywhere. And that
mm-hmm.
is like where... you know, people are being told that there's this underground basement in a pizza shop in D.C. where liberal Democrats are taking kids to be sold off in third world countries to elite people. It's just like crazy stuff that...
yeah. That's in a way kind of taking the attention off the real stuff.
Exactly. It alters people's perception and it makes them focus on this boogeyman that's not even really mm-hmm. happening. Like Taken, the movie Taken is a good example. A lot of times, like... situations, it's not where someone is kidnapped and taken to this abandoned warehouse and drugged, and like it doesn't look like that.
Mm-hmm.
And if you focus on, oh, that's what human trafficking is, and it's violent, and there's drugs and kidnappings, then you're gonna miss any number of situations. So, like the education that organizations like us and Unbound and Elijah Rising, the stuff that we're able to do and get out there in the community is really, really vital for helping people understand like what it really is.
Mm-hmm.
I like what you said earlier about it's not something that really matters unless it's something that affects you.
Right.
And I guess the reason that I bring that up is to say that it is getting better,
mm-hmm.
where like prostitution used to be just like a crime, like straight up, like if you're caught selling sex, you're getting arrested, you're getting locked up, you're getting a charge on your record, which is going to make it harder for you to get a job,
mm-hmm.
access to education, healthcare, all this stuff. And so that just kind of like kept someone in the vulnerable situation that they were in there to begin with.
Right.
That's no longer the case. Luckily, a lot of law enforcement agencies that we've trained are able to like identify situations, and even where someone is engaging in like prostitution, they understand like, okay, this is probably why the person is
mm-hmm.
engaging in prostitution, and they know that the majority of times there's actually a trafficker or a pimp involved in some way. mm-hmm. or at least someone who's trying to be a trafficker or pimp. So that's kind of one thing. And then as far as like the question of how racism is tied into human trafficking,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not, I don't consider myself necessarily an expert on this topic, but
yeah.
I know my way around it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times human trafficking is referred to as modern day slavery. And there's like something to that. It's not directly the same as mm-hmm. you know, American chattel slavery. But, you know, back in the 1800s, what would happen is black women and girls were sexualized and like demonized for their sexuality.
Right.
And they were seen as like inherently sexual, but mm-hmm. not in like a positive way at all.
Right.
And at the same time, white women were seen as like, oh, like little angels, like we mm-hmm. have to protect them. And that didn't really go away. And so
going
now,
back to dealing with the issue. Right?
Exactly. Yeah. So like now what we see mm-hmm. is a lot of the human trafficking stuff that you see in the media
mm-hmm.
focuses on like young white women. But we know on our side that like more than 50% of individuals who are trafficked for sex are black women and girls.
Right.
So it's like, okay, well, there's a correlation there.
Mm-hmm.
And like it does go back to that structural racism, you know, that leaves low-income environments, you know, with healthcare, education, mental healthcare,
right.
homelessness, right? Like all those things are like directly vulnerabilities that lead to trafficking situations.
Right. And it's kind of reminiscent of the Me Too movement. The Me Too movement was started by a black woman to bring attention to young black girls that were being raped and molested, and then it kind of got hijacked by Hollywood, and then it was the white woman, you know, thing now. Yeah. And so that this will just kind of reminds me of. I have a friend who's a lawyer, and he had this one case in particular. Mm. It's like a CPS case, I believe.
Okay.
And it's human trafficking. They got the girl set up, got her set up. I don't want to be too specific, but you know, they got her set up far away from Texas.
Sure.
With some of our family members in another state. And somehow she got back in touch with her pimp
mm-hmm.
and got back into the life.
Yep.
So how often do you see that? Like, you know, there, and why do you think that is? Because from a person from the outside, it's kind of like hard to understand. Like, you wanted to get out of this, you know, you're in a safe environment now, and you want to go back. And I think even the girl's mother was complicit in her being trafficked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man. There's so much there to unpack. In a lot of domestic violence situations, this is always an example that I like to go back to.
Mm-hmm.
People have a lot of friends and relatives who have been in abusive relationships where, okay, this person that you're with is, like, beating on you and, like, cheating on you and, like, treating you awfully, abusing you economically, mentally, whatever. You leave, you stay here for a week, you go back.
Right.
It takes an average of seven times for victims of domestic violence relationships to leave and go back before they're finally out for good.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same thing with trafficking. I think it's even, I think it happens more frequently in trafficking because mm-hmm. like we were talking about earlier, the traffickers make it to where the victim is dependent on them.
Right.
A lot of times they target people that have never really known anything else. There's a study that came out long time ago, like when the movement was first starting. But, you know, they found that a significant number of exploited individuals had a history of childhood sexual abuse, had a history of abuse at home, had a history of homelessness. Right. Like these things that I don't know anything else. So it's kind of like you see like recidivism in prison. It's like,
mm-hmm.
well, you were in the free for however long and then you went back. Like what happened? It's like, well, I don't know anything else.
Right.
And so that's something that we see. We see trauma bonding happening. Stockholm syndrome, mm-hmm. where a trafficked person will start to kind of identify with her pimp or trafficker, who a lot of times has convinced them that they're in a relationship. They're in love. You know, you can't be doing this on your own. You were having sex for free. You might as well get paid for it and
mm-hmm.
develop this relationship with them. And so they feel like they don't want to leave. And it's kind of also similar to domestic violence situations where, yeah, I'm the person who's causing you harm, but by this point, mm-hmm. I've taken you so far away from your support system that you don't really have anywhere else to get that.
Right.
And if you go back to your friends and family, you know, they're already throwing their hands up because you left and come back, left and come back, left and come back. We're done. We can't do this anymore. And the trafficker loves it when that happens. They capitalize on that.
Right.
Really heavily. Heavily.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So a lot of the focus in the media or just in our minds is focused on young girls.
Yeah.
How often do you see young boys being trafficked also?
Yeah, that's one of the things that is a little discouraging, mm-hmm. right? Is like most of the information, most of the even like scholarly work on human trafficking, a lot of it focuses on women and girls who are trafficked for sex.
Right.
And like, obviously that's important.
Mm-hmm.
The majority of people who are trafficked for sex are women and girls at the hands of men and boys. But
I'm glad you said women and girls because I keep saying young girls. But yes, women and girls. But
yeah.
Are men and boys too.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's really the reality. I mean, mm-hmm. there is, I think there is kind of a reason why the media kind of focuses on those is because those situations are, they make you pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're sensational and wow, like that's a lot of clicks. That's a lot of views. That's a lot of.
And it also might go back to the perception of men and sex, where mm-hmm. we were talking about it earlier.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah.
Yeah. And, mm-hmm. you know, so the statistics as far as like women and girls who are sexually abused as children and then men and boys who are sexually abused as children isn't, there's not that big of a difference.
Right.
There is a difference. Don't get me wrong.
I think you said, 55 and 45 worldwide? So
that's worldwide trafficking.
Yeah.
I think, oh man, I don't want to get this wrong. I don't want to quote the numbers because I would look like a fool if I got it wrong, but
yeah.
I can send it to you afterwards.
Okay.
Maybe you can, I don't know, go back and email people and say, hey, this was the number that he was talking about or something like that.
Yeah.
But the difference really isn't that stark, but the mm-hmm. difference is that men and boys are not supposed to be victims.
Right.
A man or a boy cannot come forward and say, hey, I was like sexually assaulted because, oh, well, you liked it. Like, because you do, because you're a man and you like sex.
Mm-hmm.
So there was another study that they came out with where they had brought in, can't remember the number, but they had brought in a set number of men, adult men, who had confirmed childhood sexual abuse experiences. And like, they knew that the therapist that they were talking to knew about that.
Mm-hmm.
And there was still a delayed disclosure from the time that they came in. And from the actual incident itself to the first time they're disclosed, mm-hmm. there was a delayed disclosure of 15 years average.
Wow.
15 years. You know, so I have come across young men, because most of my work is with youth,
mm-hmm.
Young men who have experienced trafficking in the past and who were currently being trafficked. It is less frequent than women and girls because they feel like they can say something.
Right. Let me ask you this.
Yeah. I don't know if that
you kind of it is. You kind of alluded to it, but I just want you to bring to light the difference, if there is one.
Okay.
But I'm pretty sure there is the difference on the girls you work with opening up mm-hmm. and the boys you work with opening up. Because I'm pretty sure you have to pull it out of the boys. I mean, maybe. I mean, I think.
I think you'd be surprised.
Okay.
A lot of the disclosures that I get from young men and boys are about other things.
Mm-hmm.
So things like, oh, well, this girl that I was seeing was, like, touching me. And, like, I just kind of went with it because I thought I was, like, I don't know. I just went with it.
Mm-hmm.
But now that, like, I went through your presentation, I realized that I think I was, like, sexually assaulted. And I don't know how to feel about that.
Mm.
Or they'll tell you about, oh, yeah, like, my girlfriend came home drunk and we, like, had sex. And I didn't really want to. But, you know, hey, she, like, wanted. And it was, like, and mm-hmm. you talk to them and you're, like, hey, like, I want you to realize, like, you didn't want to do that.
Yeah.
That could be. That's not something that you had to do. Mm-hmm. And once you start kind of pointing out to them those things, they kind of realize, oh, maybe I was in a situation where I wasn't safe or something like that did happen to me.
Mm-hmm.
There have been situations where just kind of after a program, because we do a lot of activities that lead to that, like, disclosure that, like, hey, stuff has happened to you. Let's talk about it. Like, we talk about, like, what trauma is. So it's like, what are some examples of trauma? Being sexually assaulted, being in a car crash, being shot at.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, they disclose different things from there. A lot of the work, so let's go, I'm going to talk about my work in juvenile detention.
Okay.
A lot of the women and girls that are there, it's kind of similar to where that's normal in a lot of their lives.
Mm-hmm.
Having an older man, like a much older,
unfortunately,
boyfriend,
yeah,
quote unquote, being pimped out is not uncommon. Mm-hmm. Even if they haven't been pimped out like that, they have friends who have. And if they're in the system, they're interacting with people who have. And it's kind of getting them to see, hey, that's not, like, okay.
Yeah.
Like, what's happening to you there is a form of child abuse. It's not a man who loves you because you're mature. Even though he tells you that, it's something entirely different. I think I'm rambling. The question was...
Just the difference between boys opening up and girls.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is harder to engage with young men and boys.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of pride myself on my ability to engage with men and boys and help them see, like, there's a better way to deal with things other than, like, violence or using drugs or alcohol to cope. I pride myself on that skill set. And that's kind of my thing. It's kind of my niche within, like, my organization, something that I'm really pushing for. And I've been able to engage young men and boys up until this point, but luckily now, I was talking about SSE, Stopping Sexual Exploitation, learning how to engage the adult men. Because, in a way, when you're engaging the adult men, like you said earlier, they're raising children. So you are engaging both by doing the one. So,
right.
Yeah, I hope that answers.
What areas, if you can share, should people stay away from?
Do you mean, like, in the Houston area?
Yeah, Houston area.
That's an interesting question.
Mm-hmm.
So there are, like, hot spots in the Houston area where, like, trafficking happens a lot. Like Bissonnette,
you know,
call it what it is apparently world famous for its prostitution and trafficking. I didn't know it was world famous. I knew that people in Houston and Texas knew about it, but apparently it's world famous, which I thought was pretty insane to find out.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't think that someone would need to, like, not drive down Bissonnette Street. Like, that's not... Because, like we were saying earlier, like, the majority of situations don't happen because of, like, a kidnapping.
Right.
What we see
Which is, like, the perception, though.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
What we see is people that are in positions of power influence who are able to recognize and identify those vulnerabilities that a person is experiencing. A lot of times it's someone that the person really trusts or someone who is holding some sort of a position where they should be able to trust them. So we do this presentation, we do this part of our presentation where we show, like, random faces and we're like, okay, who do you think are traffickers? And the big gag at the end is, oh, they're all traffickers. And it's like, there's a firefighter, a military guy, there's a cheerleader who's, like, a senior in high school. It's like, oh, like, it's not what the movies and TV shows have shown you. It's not always a black
the white van, you know?
Well, yeah, either, like, the creepers in the van or, like, a black man who has, like, the wife beater and the gold big chain or the fancy suit with the low right. It's like, look at these people on the screen.
These
they don't look like that.
Respected people in the community.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
And it's like, how do you tell people, how do you change their perception to where it's, like, more realistic?
Right.
So more so what I would say is the way to keep people safe is to help them identify support systems and say, like, okay, if I'm experiencing homelessness, who is someone that I can, like, ask for help so that I don't remain in that situation where traffickers are going to be targeting me?
Right.
If I'm a young person who maybe, I'll use a specific example that comes to mind, maybe I'm in high school and my parents lost their job, so I had to get a job to help pay rent, and because of COVID, they lost their jobs, and then I started OnlyFans, even though I'm a minor, to help pay bills, and then someone identifies that I'm on OnlyFans and they say, hey, you don't want to be doing that by yourself. Like, you're managing all this money. Like, let me help you out. Let me work with you.
Mm-hmm.
And that turns into a trafficking situation. So a lot of like the social media stuff is something that I talk about too,
mm-hmm.
where it's like, okay, again, not like necessarily a stranger finding your location on Snapchat and then coming and kidnapping you, but
mm-hmm.
someone who sees you tweet about how depressed you are, how bad you need money, or you're getting kicked out of your parents' house and you need somewhere to go. And a DM is like that.
So I would imagine that social media mm-hmm. really just amplified this so much mm-hmm. because the visibility.
Yeah. And the ease with which a trafficker can see what the vulnerability is
right.
and have direct, instant access.
Right.
And pretend to be whoever, say whatever. There are a lot of situations I've seen where a trafficker is pretending to be another young person and saying like, hey, like, send me pictures. Yeah. Oh, now that I have these pictures, I'm actually an adult that lives in your city and you're about to meet up with me. Or I'm going to send these around to your teacher's family, et cetera, et cetera.
Blackmail.
Yeah. There's a lot of that that goes on.
Wow.
And social media is mm-hmm. a really powerful vacuum for that to happen.
But it's also a powerful vacuum for it to fight against it.
Yeah. And that's actually kind of perfect that you mentioned that, because we're doing a podcast about it, right?
Yeah.
Like, and that's something that I encourage, like, the kiddos that I see is like, social media, we talk about how bad it is and mm-hmm. how dangerous it can be, but it also, like, so we were talking before we started recording about, like, the George Floyd situation.
Right.
Even though there was a lot of, there was a lot of information going around about that. And, like,
mm-hmm.
I remember just being on Instagram and, like, going through people's stories. And there was so much that I was learning just from mm-hmm. that one little, like, I wasn't even expecting to learn anything new there.
Right.
But there were, like, places where you could donate, places, like, books or websites that you could go to learn more information, et cetera, mm-hmm. et cetera. And it was, like, that really helped me understand how powerful social media can be.
Yeah.
Because, and I tell my kids this, like, you could share something from United Against Human Trafficking's Instagram, and it's something like, here's what you might notice if your friend is being trafficked or groomed.
Mm-hmm.
And they see that, oh, someone is constantly texting them asking where they're at, or their grades are slipping and they're not really talking to me as much. Maybe I should see what's up.
Mm-hmm.
And that person could be being trafficked. Or
right.
you could share something and not even know that someone on your followers list is in that situation. Mm-hmm. And they see that and they're like, oh, is that... Because that there was a Polaris Project is a really awesome organization. They did a study a while back and they found that 60%+ of people that are trafficked don't know what that is. They don't know what that means. They've never heard that language. They've never
right.
So like those dynamics have never been like identified. So that's another reason why they don't identify as victims.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another thing, is just like putting it in front of people, social media. I think about like my own Instagram. I have like 900 something followers. I could post something and a significant amount of people are going to see that more than if I don't share it. So
exactly.
Yeah.
Have you heard about Carrie Fagan?
I saw that on mm-hmm. the Be Someone sign.
Yeah.
But other than that, no.
This is a perfect example of the power of social media.
Okay.
Help
me. Yeah, describe.
Because
what happened.
He was a photographer. He is a photographer. He's worked with some notable people, Solange Knowles, ASAP Rocky, I believe. And allegedly, gotta say that, just you know, allegedly, so I don't get on lawsuits.
Okay.
But allegedly, he would lure these young women in and say something was wrong with his computer, so the screen was gonna be black, but he wanted them to undress and try on these different outfits for them. But he would have his camera black, and he did this to multiple girls. So what these ladies did, I'm not sure who first started it, but she stopped the Stop Carrie Fagan page, and then all of these young women just came out and told their stories.
Okay.
And now it's like it's a big thing now, and it really spread. I know you saw it, you know, on the highway on where the Be Someone usually is.
Yeah.
You saw it there. And so it just spread. So that just shows the my friend, I've been friends with my friend for a decade probably. Mm. And seeing other women come out made her finally, we never had this conversation about, she had experience with him also. We never had that conversation until, you know, this happened. So that goes to show the power of social media.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree with you. That's
yeah
powerful. I'm going to look more into that story.
Yeah. Do you have any last advice to give the listeners surrounding human trafficking or just surrounding, you know, their relationship with sex in general?
Man, there's so much that I could do that I could say, I guess. That's a really good question. Mm-hmm. I guess what I would say is try to understand things for what they are. Mm-hmm. And like, know that on social media and in movies and TV shows, they're not trying to show you the real thing. They're trying to show you a version of it that's going to make you care, that's going to make you click or make you buy things.
Right.
And I think there's an expression, the loudest dog barks for, that's not the expression. the people that are the loudest typically are on like one very far end of the spectrum of whatever it is they're talking about.
Right.
So, like, really try to learn as much as you can about, like, what the issue of human trafficking and sex buying and all of that stuff, like, really is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is where those things start to kind of unravel.
Gotcha.
It did for me anyway.
So, if there is a woman or girl or man or boy that's listening to this podcast and they might be in a situation and they want to reach out, give them the information.
Yeah, so one thing that you can do, this is my favorite resource to give to anybody, is the National Human Trafficking Hotline. The number is 1-888-3737-888. It's a 24-hour hotline. You can call or text. You can report anonymously. So if someone who's reporting doesn't want to talk to law enforcement because there might be a trafficker who could find out who it was, and then, right, like you can report anonymously. And they're not going to ask who you are, which is really cool. Depending on where you're at, because it's a national hotline, you can say, hey, I'm in Montana or something.
Mm-hmm.
I forget Montana is a state sometimes. but they'll be able to kind of point you in the right direction as far as like, okay, here's something that you can, here's an organization that you can call or something kind of along those lines. And then finding a support system is really important because, so for example, if someone is an adult who's being trafficked.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say I find out about it. I don't have like the legal right to go and like make a report on that situation. I have to like talk with them and make sure that they're ready. It's only like on their consent that we can do that.
Right.
So having that support to kind of help guide them, help walk them through that process, because a lot of people are terrified to do that alone, is really important. And then I get for young people, it's a matter of like, hey, we got to tell somebody. Because minors, there's mandated reporting. If someone is aware of a minor who's in a situation, you have to report. So it's a matter of, like, again, getting the information out. And then if you see something, you have to say something.
Gotcha.
But it's also teaching young people that, like, hey, it's okay to admit,
right,
hey, like, something's happened. So the National Human Trafficking Hotline, United Against Human Trafficking, Unbound, The Landing, Elijah Rising, Fe y Justicia, Catholic Charities, YMCA International, all those organizations are organizations, their phone number comes up on Google in a 20-second search, and those organizations that you can call and say, hey, this is a situation, let's figure something out, or help me, right? Like, all of those things are places of really good resources.
Well, if you are listening to this podcast and you are in a situation similar to what we've been talking about on this podcast, just know that you don't have to be in that situation. There is help. There is a support system out there, people who are willing to help and try to help rehabilitate you and get you started on the right track for the rest of your life. So don't think that you have to be dependent on these pimps or these whoever is in the position that's holding you hostage. Don't think that you have to be there because you really don't. And there's so much life for you to live outside of that. So thank you, Taylor, for coming on. I appreciate everything you said. I know it was some things that, you know, hit me that you said that I really enjoyed.
Oh, wow.
And I know that you you blessed the audience also, so thank you.
Yeah, no, this was awesome. Thank you for so much. Thank you so much for having me, and mm-hmm. y'all, the listeners can't see it, but, well, I don't know if they can, but
yeah,
the room that we're in is really nice. This is like the coolest. But yeah, no, this was awesome. Thank you.
All right, thank you. And thank you guys for listening. See you next week.
All right, that's it.
Woo! Oh, man. I'm really good at rambling and forgetting what my point is.
No, it's fine. I'm going to get the lady to take a picture right here.
Okay, cool. Should I stay in here?
Yeah.
Okay.
We could just stand there.